Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. According to the Centers for Disease Control, stillbirths impact more than 24,000 women and families each year, but it's something we rarely discuss. Improvements in maternity care since the 1940s have resulted in a dramatic reduction in the occurrence of stillbirth in the U.S., but those declines have recently leveled off. In a few minutes, we talk with maternity staff, midwives, and therapists who help families through the experience. But first, we hear the story of Amy and Joe Loud of Sandwich. In 2017, they were about to give birth to their second child when suddenly they were in a situation that nobody can really prepare for. It's a decision other families have to make, but not many talk about. Otis Gray has a story.
Hey, how's it going, man?
How you doing?
Good. I'm Joe.
I'm Otis.
Otis, how are you?
Joe and Amy Loud live in a Cape-style house in a quiet neighborhood.
Hi.
So nice to meet you.
You too.
They've got two dogs, two cats.
We're a little Dr. Doolittle house.
Oh, and of course, this guy.
My name's Luke. I am turning 10.
No, he's not.
I'm turning 8.
They're kind of this little Norman Rockwell family, which is funny because Amy didn't even always want kids.
No, I did not want any kids for the longest time. And then, of course, when I got older and I met the love of my life, I definitely wanted to have a family.
Guilty as charged.
So in 2016, Amy and Joe found out that they were pregnant with their second son. They named him Landon. And then in June of 2017, they gave birth to Landon.
If you don't mind, do you have any pictures?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Amy brings me over to a shelf with photos of Landon on it. And there's one from a couple hours after he was born. He's swaddled in a little blanket with stripes on it. And the photo is in black and white.
Yeah, it's hard to look at as it is. But looking at it in color is even harder. You can see, like, it's, like, almost, like, bruised almost on his face on that side, you know, and his lips are black, and everything is just way more pronounced in color.
One morning, just over 8 months into the pregnancy, Amy told Joe that she didn't feel Landon moving around as much. They figured they'd stop by their hospital, Beth Israel Deaconess, in Plymouth, just to check that he was okay. And as the midwife was giving Amy an ultrasound, Joe saw this concerned look on her face.
I think the way that she said it was, you know, I'm concerned because at this point we're not hearing a heartbeat. Just everything stopped. Amy was sort of in shock.
We had everything ready. His room was done. All of a sudden, there wasn't going to be a him.
They immediately had to make a very different set of decisions than what they were prepared for. Did they want to deliver Landon by C-section as planned, or by natural birth? They had to think about funeral arrangements. And then they were hit with this question.
Did we want to spend time with the baby after he was born?
My immediate thought was no. Almost like I'm in denial, so no, I don't want to see him.
The doctor that I was talking to said that it was something that they would recommend. They said that a lot of people that have gone through this before feel as though that they needed to do that in order to have some closure. And I wasn't sure if we were going to want to have that memory of holding our baby who was dead.
The second that they brought him in, he was just perfect. He looked like he was just sleeping.
You're sitting there holding your son. You're looking at him. You're still asking yourself, am I dreaming? Is this real?
Amy and Joe took turns holding Landon and saying goodbye. After about 30 minutes, they let the hospital take Landon's body so that they could rest before they see him for a second time.
Had we known what was going to change, we would have kept hanging on to him for a little longer at that first time around.
The hospital staff took Landon to the morgue to keep him cool. This is the practice in hospitals all around the U.S. They bring the baby to the morgue to preserve the body and then back to the family for brief visits.
When we first saw him, you know, his face was like, you know, had color and was, you know, plumper and a couple hours later, you know, it was not that way anymore.
Because Landon's body deteriorated so quickly, Amy and Joe only got to see him for about 3 hours total, which means that their family and friends didn't get to say their goodbyes.
And so those are moments that we can't get back.
After they left the hospital, Amy started having anxiety attacks because everyone they knew expected them to have a baby. So Amy and Joe kept having to break the news that he was stillborn. It got to the point where Amy didn't even want to leave the house.
There could have been no lower low. And that went on for months. I was battling with God. And so, you know, one day I just said to myself, okay, I think there's enough sadness. I need to make something out of this.
Through support groups that they were in online, they found out about this thing called a cuddle cot, which is basically a crib lined with a cooling pad that allows families to spend days, even a week, with their child after they've passed, so friends and family can come visit, they can take photos. The cot itself costs about $3,000. 95% of the hospitals in the UK have them, and only 7% in the States do. So Amy started a fundraiser in Landon's name.
And in a flash, we had enough money for one. It was just amazing.
It was almost like a pressure release valve.
Like, these are the memories we're making with him. It's something tangible.
Amy and Joe donated the cot in Landon's name to their hospital. On the cot, there's a plaque that reads, "There's no footprint too small that it cannot leave an imprint on this world." Within 1 week, the cot was put to use. A couple lost their baby at 9 months, and they got to use the cot for 3 full days, allowing their friends and family to come meet the baby. What Amy and Joe found out is that over 60% of these cots in the U.S. are donated by families just like them. Some hospitals don't even give families the option to see their child after they're stillborn.
Why do you think it is that a lot of places don't have these?
I think that what it comes down to, we don't like to think about bad things. Getting a cuddle cot is in some ways planning for the worst. You know, if you think about the way that we treat people's passing that have been with us for any amount of time, there's a whole process that we go through to ensure that people have an opportunity to see the deceased person and to pay their respects. And so why should it be any different when you have a child?
In the months after this interview, Amy and Joe raised enough money for a second cot, and now they have their eyes on a third.
This piece came to us through the Transom Story Workshop. Otis Gray was a graduate of the program last year. Joining us to discuss supports and services to help families through this difficult time is Shannon Uchkunas. She's the founder of Cape Cod Baby and offers supports to families through pregnancy, childbirth, and beyond. She also offers bereavement supports. Welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Erin Horahan, who's a therapist who works with individuals struggling and with bereavement and major mental illness in private practice in Kingston. Good morning, Erin.
Nice to be here.
Susan Shar is a maternity nurse at Falmouth Hospital. Morning, Susan.
Good morning.
And on the phone, Rachel Boswell, a maternity nurse at Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital in Plymouth. Good morning to you, Rachel.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Shannon, you're a doula. Explain what that is. I was saying before, I just recently, a few years ago, found out what a doula was. So you're called in to help families whose baby has died in utero. And what is your role in that situation? And what is it? Start with, what is a doula?
Okay, so a doula gives support to pregnant families. I generally work with them during their pregnancy, labor, and postpartum. I also attend live births. Clearly, when I get the call of bereavement, it's last minute because nobody plans to have a stillborn baby. When I get those calls, I make myself readily available for that family because they need the most support. So typically, I would get a call and the family would let me know when and where to meet them. my services include support for not just the mother, but the entire family. So if they have young children, I can help them navigate how to talk to the children. I have books available to give the children to help them explain the death of a child. Mm. I can call funeral homes and set up services so that the family can focus completely on their baby and themselves and trying to make it through this terrible time.
Yeah. Erin, you're a therapist, but you also struggled with fertility issues and lost twin boys. Will you tell us your story?
Yes. Thank you. So I, in 2015, was lucky enough to have two twin boys, Caden and Colby. Quickly after learning that I was pregnant, I ended up being diagnosed with what's called twin-to-twin transfusion disorder, which causes one baby to be almost shrink-wrapped in the placenta, causing sometimes veins or vessels that grow in between the baby's sacs, which supersedes all of the natural course of how they're supposed to grow. So April 1st of 2015, I ended up having emergency fetal surgery at Women and Infants in Rhode Island. And luckily, they survived surgery. However, it was very, very, very complicated, of course, you can imagine. About several weeks later, being homebound and trying to keep them alive, we went in every other day to South Shore Hospital to have ultrasounds. And of course, like Amy and Joe in their story, one day we had an ultrasound and our son Caden had passed. So 8 days later, I also, it was time to deliver our other son, Colby. And so I had a stillbirth son. And then after delivery, 4 hours later, our son Colby passed. And of course, we had had such struggles even prior to that. We had had four miscarriages. And so luckily with the help of IVF, we were able to go ahead and have our beautiful boys.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Thank you.
And that really prompted your work now, right? I mean, that really got you.
It did. Yeah. It did. So I am now working as a bereavement therapist at a healing and wellness center in Kingston called Hope Floats, which is a nonprofit for folks who are dealing with all forms of grief and loss. After, the death of our boys, we were lost. Yeah. We didn't know what to do. So we were lucky enough to find Hope Floats, and we joined the parent bereavement group. And a year later, I am now a part of their team, and I'm so grateful.
And a mom.
And a mom. Always a mom. Yeah. Even to all of my children who have passed, you're always a mom.
Yeah. Something you don't forget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Susan, when a baby dies in utero, it has to be delivered either by cesarean or vaginally. Are women given the choice of how to deliver?
Well, first of all, this is one of the saddest things that a family can go through. And if a mother's had a prior cesarean section, it's safer for her to be delivered by a cesarean for, for this birth. If she's not had a cesarean, it's actually healthier for the mother's body to have a vaginal birth.
What a horrible thing to have to go through, huh?
It really is. Yeah. It's a very, very tough time and the worst news any parent can receive.
I think one of the things about maternity nurses is you choose that because that's such a happy place, right? I mean, you're bringing children into the world, and then you have something like this, which is such a horrible experience for the families, but I think also for the staff that's helping them through this. So, how does maternity staff help women and families through this delivery, and what information and supports have you found that really help make a difference?
Well, the maternity nurses, fortunately at Falmouth Hospital, are very skilled in this. It's not something we want to be especially good at, but I think we are. It begins when the family enters the hospital, and our whole team, the obstetricians, the midwives that are there, our nursing staff, We start by finding a space for this family to be where they're away from the sound of babies, if at all possible, at the end of the hall. So it's a little bit safer for that family. We begin with lots and lots of education, just kind of giving them information about what to expect, what kind of labor and birth this may be. Ideas about, you know, prompting the idea about seeing and holding the baby mm-hmm. afterwards and what the baby may look like, because a lot of times there's a lot of fear around that. Many young families have not ever seen a dead body before, right. and that can be very frightening. And we want to try to make it as easy as possible for these parents and for them to include their support systems, if that's grandparents or close friends, whatever is going to provide them the most comfort. We also try to bring in their support systems with regard to religious preference or their faith, so that they have more support. And that tends to be a big help as well.
I will say several times I've called in clergy because they would like their babies to be baptized. Mm-hmm. I collaborate with Alicia Neal, who is the founder of Angel Babies, which they get donations of wedding gowns and formal gowns. And through volunteer work, these gowns are traced and cut and sewn. And the hospitals get a kit, and it has a gown from gestation. It could be from a one-pound baby up to a three-month-old baby. Mm. So they have those moments, because as a parent who loses a child, you want to hear the first cry mm-hmm. and their first word, and you don't get any of that. So with the Angel Gowns program, it helps families get sort of closure mm-hmm. before the baby is taken.
Rachel, there was a time when a baby who was delivered, stillborn, or died in delivery was quickly taken away, often before a mother, father even saw the child. Families are now being asked if they want to spend time with the baby. How are you finding families respond?
You know, it's interesting. It is important to encourage families to spend time with their babies. And, you know, I think most families' reaction is similar to what the Louds described in their interview, where they feel like they wouldn't want to spend time with their baby. And often we do encourage them ahead of time. Again, speaking just to education, we tell them from our experience, from other families' experience, that it is important for the grieving process for them to, you know, spend the time with their baby that they deserve and, you know, to help with their healing and their closure, to spend as much time with them as they really feel like they need. And often, even those families that say they may not want to do often change their mind once the baby has been delivered. And, you know, the obstetricians, the midwives, the nurses all will usually encourage them to do that. And not just for parents, you know, sometimes siblings, grandparents, all parts of the family deserve to have some closure and spend time with the baby.
Yeah. I can see the conflict sometimes in some, you know, do we want to, do we not want to? We have to make up our mind quickly, you know, because this is happening so quickly. Does that, Susan, you're nodding your head as I'm saying that.
Time is precious. And after the birth of the baby, for the parents who are reeling at this point, to be able to have that opportunity to have the baby in the room, to have the opportunity to take inventory of fingers and toes, like all parents mm-hmm. do with new babies, to see their baby, to hold and love their baby. We at Falmouth have a cuddle cot, and that is an option for families to use. I will say that we've had families keep the babies in the room for up to 3 days, is probably the longest that I've seen, but it allows that family to say goodbye in whatever way is comfortable for them.
Right.
And if that's bringing grandparents in or siblings in, however they choose to do it, we will support them in whatever way is comfortable. But I do think that having that time is a luxury they will never get back.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the cuddle cot, which a lot of the hospitals around there have, but you say a lot of families don't opt to use it.
The cuddle cot is a cooling mattress,
right.
And so it causes it. The purpose of it, excuse me, is to slow the degradation of the baby's body. But when the mother's holding the baby, which a lot of them will do quite a bit, they want the baby to feel warm.
Right.
And the cuddle cot
does
the opposite. So it's a choice that the families have. And so, you know, it's another option, something that they can have. It has a lovely Moses basket with it, which is really sweet. And or the baby could be in a crib like we would have with any baby, or even in the warming. We have a warming unit that we bring in for the births. Yeah. And so that also can keep the baby a little bit warmer and make it a little bit easier. Yeah.
Rachel, is that your experience too?
No. So interestingly enough, my experience is very different. So, you know, having the cuddle cot has really changed our practice significantly since it has been donated. Personally, out of my patients, I've only had one not choose to use it. We just, unfortunately, last month had a patient who kept her baby in the room with her for 4 days. Mm-hmm. She was able to use the cuddle cot and to have family visit. It was, you know, we worked with her very closely. If she had people, family or friends coming who did not choose to see the baby, we were able to, you know, remove the baby with the cuddle cot while the baby stayed with the nurses and then bring it back in after they left. We find patients have said that it has made a huge difference for them. And like I said, most of them are choosing to use it.
Yeah. So mentioned in that piece we heard, this, he said the cuddle cots were $3,000. They're more like, what, $8,000, right?
It depends on who you speak to about that. I know you can get them for cheaper than $8,000.
Erin, did you and your husband choose to spend time with your boys?
Yes, we were so lucky to be able to take the time to, you know, have as much time individually with the boys and collectively. And South Shore Hospital, oh my goodness.
They go above and beyond.
They
really
do. They do. You know, like we were saying, time is of the essence. And so luckily we were, you know, able to, you know, in an odd way, really prepare with the team. And that was another thing, you know, as a patient, when your team is collaborating and, you know, so you can feel, you know, that as you talk to them. And they really collaborated, not just together, but with us to make sure that we were going to get the optimal experience. And, you know, you don't know what you don't know in the moment. And they did.
Yeah.
And so we were able to take advantage of that. And through that, we were able to be with the boys, you know, for a few hours. We did not have a cuddle cot. But I almost wonder, you know, if how different that would have been for us or not. But there are no regrets.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to share your experience with us. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about the experience of stillbirths and miscarriages with Shannon Uchkuna. She's the founder of Cape Cod Baby, offers supports to families through pregnancy, childbirth, and beyond. She also offers bereavement supports. Erin Horahan's a therapist who works with individuals struggling with bereavement and major mental illness in private practice in Kingston. Susan Shar's a maternity nurse at Falmouth Hospital, and Rachel Boswell's a maternity nurse at Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital in Plymouth. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And I guess this is a question for Susan or Rachel. Is there a bereavement training either in nursing school or in continuing education courses that's geared to maternity staff? You mentioned that there's this training goes on. Where does that happen? Does it happen in all of those areas?
For me, what I've seen is there are courses that you can take that specialize in bereavement. And you know, there are some nurses that they actually get certified in bereavement nursing. And that involves a lot of support of the families and helping to provide as many memories for that family as possible in that moment. So they do a great deal. We have one nurse that works at Falmouth, and Her name's Hope. And she's incredible. She's actually formerly worked at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And that was her specialty, was working with families who had experienced a loss. And she's amazing. She takes so many photographs.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we hear over and over again just the importance of that, because this is what the parents are going to have.
Right. And in the moment, they're in this surreal world where they can't believe what's happening, and they're not thinking of preserving memories at that time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and Hope just does it in such an amazingly artistic, beautiful way that it's really a wonderful thing. And putting together a memory box, actually, of all sorts of mementos, a lock of hair, if that's possible, the measuring tape, the photographs, fingerprints, footprints, cards. We have blankets that the babies have been wrapped in, little hats, depending on the sizes. We don't have the angel gowns, but we have volunteers in the community that actually knit these darling little blankets. And so we have matching blankets and hats.
I would love to bring angel gown kits down to the hospital so that you have them on hand when needed.
Yeah. Rachel, yes. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would say similar. So there are conferences and things like that. We also, here at Beth Israel Plymouth, we do try to guide a lot of our education based on family experience. So often the nurses that are involved in caring for a family with a loss, as, you know, they're seen later on, either when they have other pregnancies or if they're counseled after, we do provide a lot of that feedback back to our staff just to try to help educate, you know, what the parents felt was helpful for them, you know, good and bad, things that they thought went really well and things that maybe we could have worked better on. So we do always try to educate our staff with that. I also am a nursing instructor here at the hospital, and I personally do an article and a session for my nursing students on you know, perinatal loss. A lot of my students that I see want to be OB nurses. I mean, why wouldn't you want to sit here and bring babies into the world every day? And I always tell them our good is great and our bad is really bad and sad. So I feel strongly it's important as a nursing instructor for these nurses to realize that this is something that they are going to have to deal with if they choose this field.
Shannon, we know that people process grief differently. In your experience, are there particular things that you found generally helpful to families in such a sad situation?
So like Susan was saying, having those memory boxes and those moments, and like we were talking about earlier, you don't get a do-over.
Right.
So you want to have the option to spend the time with your baby and spend it how you need to spend it. And everybody processes differently. Every family is going to process differently. And they need avenues to be able to explore what's going to work for them. So it's so important to have little mementos and little keepsakes that you can have to remember your time in the hospital with your baby.
Yeah. Go ahead, Susan.
I think another piece that really kind of makes it real is calling the baby by name.
Absolutely.
You know, this and using that name, referring to the baby, It's all part of that special, making it special and making it as important for the families as you can.
Yeah. And I think it's important for family members and friends to realize that when you want to reach out, but you feel like, I don't want to say anything because I'm going to make them sad or I don't want to bring it up, they think about their babies every single day, all the time.
Yeah.
So it's important to use their name, like Susan said, and keep their memory alive.
Yeah, Erin, I'm going to turn to you because you've been through this and you're also a therapist. So what are your thoughts on this?
It's all accurate. It's so true. Number one, I think, you know, you anticipate that this child or, you know, or children in my case are, you know, going to be, you know, 18 one day, you know, and that you're going to have all these memories and create all of these opportunities to love and, you know, watch your child grow. And so when that is not the case anymore, every moment, like I said, it counts. Yeah. And so, you know, when people would, you know, come work with us in the hospital and when family and friends would come visit us, it was imperative that we heard their names because they were here, you know. I also, of course, feel very strongly that just because a child is not here doesn't mean that they're gone.
Right.
Love never dies.
Yeah. Aaron, I want to ask you this question too, because I'm thinking of somebody I know who had several miscarriages, and the pain was so much for her, she decided, I can't go through this again. Right. You had that same experience. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to women who've gone through this, especially, and we've talked about stillbirth here a lot here this morning, but miscarriages are equally as painful for families.
It's confusing. Yeah, it's scary. It's just devastating, and you feel powerless. And, you know, like we were saying earlier, you just never know. One moment you're pregnant, the next you're not. Yeah. And sometimes you feel you're responsible. It's your fault. Like we've said, a mother can do everything correctly, but it doesn't mean that it's going to have the best outcome.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
And also, I'm the type of person, you can't tell me what to do. I wanted to be a mom, and I wanted to be a mom to a physical child here. Yeah. And I'm a mom to seven beautiful babies.
Yeah.
But I have one physical baby here now, and she's two, and we're just so grateful.
Yeah. When do the doulas start working with the families?
It depends. So if it's for obviously a stillbirth, I would get a call typically when they're leaving the office of the hospital and they just found out, like you said, there's no longer a heartbeat. They're lost. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn. And they're not sure how to process on their own. That's typically when I get the phone call.
What about when you're actually, you know, thinking you're going to go full? Do you start working with them when the baby's born, or is it earlier?
The earliest I've ever gotten signed to be a doula was when they were 8 weeks pregnant.
Yeah.
And so my support carries on from the time they sign the contract until that baby's here. And if they wish to do postpartum care after, I do that as well.
So have you been a doula with somebody who's had a miscarriage then?
Or? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and how do you handle that? We can't preserve really memories, can you? I mean, what do you do in that situation?
It's more like I was saying to Erin earlier. It's more of mental health at that point, because you need to take care of yourself. And like you were saying earlier, Susan, that mom guilt is real, and you feel that you take it on yourself. Why did this happen to me? What could I have done differently?
Right.
And we're talking about mom guilt. What about dads? Dads probably feeling some of the same things,
and
right? Helpless. What could I do?
I think with dads, it's more they're supposed to protect their family, and they can't do that.
Yeah. Shannon, you said something that really made me think. You said they never forget. They're always thinking about this. And I think I told you this before we went on the air. And I think this is true for both moms and dads. I have a 94-year-old uncle who recently said to me, you know, nobody knows this, but, you know, my aunt Jenny and I did have a baby. And it was, again, it died at birth. And I just thought that was amazing that still at 94, he's still talking about this.
You know, important memory.
Remembering. I should say still talking about it. I did know about it. But that he, you know, that's still in his heart at 94.
It never
happened,
goes away.
Yeah, long, long time ago.
Yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd like to share a thought or your experience with us, 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about helping families through the experience of stillbirth and miscarriage. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. In studio with us is Shannon Uchkunis. She's the founder of Cape Cod Baby and offers supports to families through pregnancy, childbirth, and beyond. She also offers bereavement supports. Erin Horhan's a therapist who works with individuals struggling with bereavement and major mental illness in private practice in Kingston. Susan Shar is a maternity nurse at Falmouth Hospital, and on the phone we have Rachel Boswell, a maternity nurse at Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital in Plymouth. We were talking about dads and their experiences through this. And Erin, you wanted to mention a dad support group.
Yes. Where my private practice is through Hope Floats Healing and Wellness in Kingston. It's a special group for fathers who, of course, are, you know, in the midst of this incredible trauma and crisis on, you know, so many different levels. And we feel like dads get lost in the process. And so they are grieving in ways that we can't even imagine. And it's very different for the way that moms grieve. And so Ken and Denise Brack, who are the co-founders and executive directors of Hope Floats, they lost their son, Michael, And so, of course, they continued their work by trying to help others through the grieving process. And Ken has started a dad's group. And it's fantastic because they literally, you know, just get to be them. And they get to talk about the things that get often misplaced. And so that group is getting larger. And, you know, along with all the other support services we have for couples as well, it's really wonderful.
Women who've delivered a baby go through a postpartum period, whether or not the baby survives. It's a biological process that can include lactation. Susan, you're a lactation consultant in addition to being a maternity nurse. How do you counsel women who've lost a baby and have that milk come in?
That can be a very bittersweet moment. It's another reminder. And so after we have counseled the mothers that this is a possibility, we talk about options. One is to help them wean their supply, and another is some mothers may be interested in donating their milk. There is a milk bank called the Northeast Mother's Milk Bank, and they will accept donations from mothers. And for some women, it's a way of honoring their baby, and that milk goes to little preterm babies in neonatal intensive care units, so it can be a way of helping another baby to be healthy. So it's a very important and very meaningful gift for some women to be able to have that opportunity to do that.
Rachel, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, exactly the same. We do often, you know, make sure that is one of our points to review with them prior to them going home, and we do usually offer them both options and give them information for both as well.
Depression is common postpartum, and, you know, when you've lost a baby on top of that, I can't even imagine it. It would be like kind of doubly compounded there. So what are some of the signs of depression, and is it discernible from grief? Because you're grieving, which kind of includes some signs of depression. Versus, so what are some of the signs you're looking for?
Yeah, I think if I could speak to that, I think that, you know, depression can look all kinds of different ways, of course, for different people. But, you know, grief is special. It's like watching a child write on a piece of paper. It has all forms of, you know, different kind of ways of being. One minute you feel fine, the next minute you are not able to even get out of bed. And it's a process, and it's about healing, and it's about an evolution of finding about who you are now as somebody who has grieved. And so depression is a symptom, and it has varying modalities, of course, but also attached to that can come anxiety. And we heard that at the very beginning of our show today. And so that anxiety can, if not treated, turn in quickly into depression. And that's so debilitating. And it just adds another link in the chain of trying to heal from the loss.
And of course, that healing process, just like the grieving process, is different for everybody, right?
Right. Yeah. Yes. And remember, too, that, you know, these people are now changed. They're, as I call, evolving.
Yeah. Now, for families who've had miscarriages or stillbirths, pregnancy and delivery can be very scary. Is there a way to lessen the stress and fear in those situations? I mean, Erin, you're the example. You had the miscarriages, you had the stillbirths, and then you have this beautiful baby girl.
Yes.
I imagine delivering that baby girl, you had a lot of anxiety.
I didn't even wear maternity clothes.
Yeah.
People thought I was just in such denial, but I was so afraid.
Yeah.
So much fear. So I think being part of the process with, you know, all of the providers, the doctors and nurses and caring for us, I think was so important because they made us feel like we were a part of the decision making. And they really gave us a lot of good information that I think was really so helpful. So the more information, you know, the better. Yeah. And the more feeling like you are part of the choice and, you know, feeling like, you know, you have decisions also when it comes to, you know, caring for your child.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so typically, I know some of you haven't heard the term before, but a baby after a loss is called a rainbow baby.
Yes.
I had not heard that before. Yeah.
It's a beautiful gift after the storm that you've been through. And we talked about it. It's not a replacement.
No.
It's not taking the place of the children or child that you lost. It's a new beautiful gift and a new beginning for your family. And yeah. I was just going to say how important it is for parents and families to understand your mental well-being during this time is more important if the doctors are telling us that the baby is healthy and safe.
Mm-hmm.
So working with families their second time around is very different.
Yeah. Rachel, what about your thoughts on that?
No, I would agree. I think there is extra reassurance given. We work very hard to make all parents understand that if they've experienced a loss before, it is very normal to feel, you know, maybe in denial of the pregnancy or to be more cautious. And I always want all my patients to feel that, you know, they always think maybe when they come in, if they haven't felt the baby move as much, that, you know, they're being silly or, you know, is this wrong? Am I being paranoid? And I always tell them reassurance is so important. Yeah. And when I teach new nurses, I tell them it's so important, as I think you guys have touched upon, just to feel like part of the team. I explain everything to them. You know, this is what you're feeling. This is normal. It's normal to feel, you know, a little more stressed out about the situation. And also just to really make sure that we are sharing with them that this is not a replacement. This is a whole new experience.
Right.
But you're also going to have those feelings come back. We often ask patients as well. There are times I've experienced quite a few times where our patients who have experienced a loss have actually wanted to have their nurses back that they had during the loss. And we try very hard to make that happen. I've known of a few situations where we have switched nurses' schedules around so that they can come in and take care of them. I actually had a patient who had a loss who came in and took care of her next two times while she delivered her next two babies, and that can make a huge difference.
What a great idea. Wow. Susan, you want to say something?
I do. It's so true about that. Having those same nurses, it's like having a friend with you because you've been through a huge experience together.
Yeah.
And they get it. They want to be there for that mother and that dad and support them in any way. So that's really helpful. And I do think that, you know, any time that we can educate families and make them feel comfortable. One of my roles at Falmouth is a childbirth educator. And we talk about, you know, one of the icebreakers actually in the class is what's been your favorite part of the pregnancy so far. And so many times mothers will say, well, it's feeling the baby move. They love that. Even the dads say that. They get really loving feelings from that. And so when with that, we springboard off of, and that's really a sign of baby wellness. And, you know, you should be feeling your baby move every day. And if you haven't been feeling the baby move, lie on your left side, have something cold and sweet to drink. And if you haven't felt 10 movements, you should be contacting your provider. So it's an opportunity for education. And I think for families that have been through a prior loss, having some reassuring signs like that, things that they can do, and knowing they can call their provider is a very reassuring thing, and that, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
That's why we're all there. We're all on the same team.
When you go through that that storm, as we were talking about, families struggle with how to tell the outside world about their loss. And I think people are at a loss how to respond to the news. Erin, how do you counsel families on that? And then going through, like, the next time where you know, you're pregnant again and you're sort of afraid to talk about it, right?
Yes. It's imperative to, well, like we said, you know, talk about that child and help, you know, the people who love us and who support us to know that it's okay to, you know, talk about that child, knowing that that's just what's a part of who we are, and that we had anticipations, we had dreams, we had ideas of what was going to be. And so to talk about those things is okay. Yeah. And also, a big misconception is sometimes, you know, people feel like, well, if I don't talk about it, or if I kind of just, you know, quickly say my condolences, that might make someone not be as upset. And really, sometimes we don't need to say anything at all. Yeah. Sometimes all we need to just say is, I'm here.
Yeah.
And I love you.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, living in the time we are with social media, a lot of families, their pregnancies play out on social media. So your friends from all around the world are seeing the milestones that you're hitting, and they know when you're getting close to the end of your pregnancy, and they're expecting to see the baby. I've worked with families and helped them set up sort of a kind of a statement to put on social media. And please know that putting pictures out there and putting their story out there isn't made to make you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They need to do it for themselves.
Right.
And they need to feel that if they can get this information out there without being afraid to go to the grocery store mm-hmm. and running into somebody and feeling that anxiety mm-hmm. of, I don't want to have to talk about it when I'm out in public unless I'm ready to talk about it. Yeah. They need that platform to be yeah. able to get that information out there to the most amount of people yeah. that they can.
Shannon, you mentioned earlier that you help families when there's other children involved. What's the best way to talk about a loss with other children in the family?
There are several children's books that are available that describe loss and grief and how to help the other children. Depending on the age of the children, you may not want them to come in to see the baby, but again, that's a personal preference. So if you feel that your children need to be there to say their goodbyes, to get an understanding of what they're going to see and how the family is going to move on, is a personal preference.
That's a tough thing too, though. I mean, you know, you're reeling from what's just happened as we're talking, and as you're in this surreal thing, and you've got all these decisions and things happening, and then you're like, do I bring my 4-year-old?
It really is, because we as adults have a hard time processing yeah. what's right. happening and so what true. We're seeing mm-hmm. and the feelings that we're going to feel and how we're going to move on from those feelings. Yeah. And so,
Rachel, yeah. do you counsel people when they ask that question? Should I bring my other children in?
Yeah, I usually tell them that it is definitely a personal decision. But what I do try to do, if it's prior to the delivery, is just to educate the parents and, you know, kind of go over with them how the baby may look and things like that. And personally, if they, you know, encourage them usually that they may want to spend some time with the baby first and maybe make their decision after that mm-hmm. to see if they would like to bring their children in.
Yeah, that's good advice. Erin, we talked about your private counseling and that you work with Hope Floats Wellness, but tell us a little mm-hmm. bit more about Hope Floats Wellness. What are their mission and services?
So Hope Floats Healing and Wellness is, as I said, a nonprofit organization to help families deal with grief and loss of all kinds. Not only is it working with people who have lost a child, but also a spouse. We help folks with suicide loss prevention, as well as all healness and wellness opportunities, such as Reiki yoga, trying to combine a whole set of circumstances collectively to help the person heal. We also have what's called Mike's Club, and that is a parent and child support group where children work together around the loss while the parents are also meeting separately. So we try to focus on the whole family system.
Got a final, like less than a minute. You want to give a final thought, Shannon?
I just want to let families know that there is help available if you do find yourself in this situation. Information you can find online. And it's important for people to know that nobody ever wants it to happen, but the help is there when they need it.
And we will post links with more information about all the resources and websites that we've mentioned today at our website, capeandislands.org. Shannon Uchkunis, Erin Horahan, Susan Shar, and Rachel Boswell, thank you all for coming in and talking about such a difficult topic, especially Erin.
Thank you
so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mindy.
Thank you for having us.
Much.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.